It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to a growing body of research into mind-altering drugs, especially psilocybin, the psychoactive ingredient in hallucinogenic mushrooms. We dive into UW-Madison research on these substances and the clinical trials underway. Join in at any point, calling with your questions about psychedelic drug research at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul Hudson is director of the UW Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances. Center opened in 2021, studies potential therapeutic uses. Paul, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you very much for having me this morning.
So the center really getting started here, studying the effects of psilocybin on opioid use disorder. Why are researchers hopeful psilocybin can help with opioid addiction?
Well, we've seen reports from other really great institutions such as the New York University and Johns Hopkins and University of Alabama, Birmingham, that psilocybin doses, 2 to 3 of them, seem to have a really dramatic effect on alcohol use, tobacco addiction, and also even cocaine abuse. And so we've got a really strong group of investigators here in the addictive medicine, Randy Brown and Christopher Nicholas. We felt that our expertise with psilocybin from previous studies really suggested that we look at the unaddressed problem of opioid addiction with psilocybin and also methamphetamine.
What stage are you in the research with the connection to helping opioid addiction?
We have both studies open for opioid and separately for methamphetamine addiction. Both studies are fairly new in terms of being opened. And so we are beginning the process of recruiting individuals that might be appropriate for these studies.
What type of individuals would be appropriate for the opioid addiction study?
Well, we are looking for individuals who are otherwise reasonably healthy, who are abusing opioids, and the criteria are a little bit detailed, so I don't want to go into too much detail here, but but basically those who are abusing opioids. And we in the past have been looking at people who are also on stable doses of Suboxone or buprenorphine. But in this case, we can take individuals who are not yet on buprenorphine or Suboxone and put them on it. Our goal there, Kate, is to see if we can keep them on the buprenorphine maintenance therapy. Now, addiction of any sort is considered a chronic disease. And just like some people take thyroid medicine for low thyroid levels, so individuals who have opioid addiction can run a relatively normal life if they can be consistent with taking some of these maintenance therapies like Suboxone or methadone and move on with their life. Unfortunately, there are some people that still have a hard time not taking these other illicit substances like heroin that might be laced with fentanyl. And so our hope, frankly, with these studies is first to show that it's safe, that we don't make things worse. We don't expect that we will, but also perhaps that we can decrease their use of illicit drugs.
Oh, I think that's really interesting because down the road, as psychedelic therapeutics come to market that day, you're kind of seeing this as, you know, when other treatment avenues have failed in some way, that perhaps what you're working on with these types of therapies and psilocybin could be the next step?
Yes, indeed. Typically, we're going to be integrating this with some cognitive behavioral therapies, some other well-established approaches of just behavioral modification. But we hope that the psilocybin, by being frankly a disruptor of programmed thoughts, might allow people to look beyond their current affliction and say, I don't need to do this anymore. I'm willing to go through perhaps a little bit of withdrawal just to straighten out my life. And this is what we've seen with doses of psilocybin in patients who are taking, drinking too much, smoking, and even with cocaine. So we're very hopeful.
Do scientists really know what is happening in the brain? Can you tell us what's happening when people take psilocybin?
Oh, I'd like to say that we do, but we don't. We don't know if this is just a simple pharmacologic effect with a drug going into a receptor and the psychedelic components are just basically a side effect, or if they're fundamental to the benefit of the psychedelic, that we do need to have some sort of a profound psychedelic event and experience, and frankly, how long that needs to be, because there are some drugs that we're looking at that would have a very short duration of action, and we can process, we can deal with, and treat more people per day, but we don't frankly know if that's going to be as effective as several hours of being under the influence of psilocybin with a trained facilitator.
What are the challenges and barriers, as a Schedule I drug, the challenges to getting psilocybin approved for treatment purposes?
Well, for any experimental drug, I have to go to the FDA and get permission to use a drug as an experimental drug. And I've done that with not only psilocybin, but for herbals, for various other previous studies. So there's a process that I have to go through to look at any experimental drug. The psilocybin adds some complexity in that I have to get permission from the state and the DEA to use psilocybin in this case for investigational use, or just to have it, period. I'll be honest with you, the FDA and the state and the DEA have not been in any way obstructive. In fact, I've had some informal conversations with individuals within the FDA and the DEA saying, we're really excited about this. We think that there's a lot of potential. Just don't cut corners. And in fact, the FDA has given breakthrough drug status to psilocybin for the treatment of depression, and similarly, MDMA for the treatment of PTSD.
And we're going to talk about MDMA more in a moment, but that kind of runs parallel to this storyline we're hearing out there that, in this field, that after a half century, psychedelic drug research is making a big comeback now. And I'm just wondering, what has changed?
Well, that's a good question. I think that in some respects, many people of my age, I'm not one of them, who are in places of authority and regulatory control, may have had some psychedelic experience in the past and said, the time may have come. But I'll credit Roland Griffiths at Johns Hopkins for really pushing things back into the highway here to get things rolling. And I really credit Johns Hopkins for taking the initiative and getting some really great clinical studies going to show that, in fact, there's a lot of great science here that supports this work.
So, circling back one more time here to opioid addiction, clinical trials underway. What is the roadmap like, the timeline like?
So, psilocybin is primarily being developed by two organizations, USONA Institute and Compass Pathways for the Treatment of Depression. And they are both pretty much in the same position of moving into the regulatory clinical trials. I expect that psilocybin will probably be approved by the FDA for the treatment of depression in 2025 or 26. So we're not too far away. The roadmap is that once a drug is approved for a particular indication, then prescribers can typically prescribe it for other uses, so that if it's approved for depression, a therapist prescriber could prescribe it for opioid addiction as well.
We have the head of the UW-Madison Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances, Paul Hudson, as we explore what scientists are investigating with the way psychedelics work on the brain, the roadmap ahead. Join our conversation with your questions about psychedelics, the future of these therapy avenues, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the scientific research of mushrooms that produce psilocybin, the chemicals with psychoactive properties, and what it means for brain science and mental health treatment in the future. Call in with your questions about this growing body of research on psychedelics, 800-642-1234. Paul Hudson leads the UW-Madison Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances, professor in the UW School of Pharmacy. Paul, we heard from Mary in Bayfield, called in and says that they really want to hear you talk about how this could be used to treat methamphetamines. And Mary says this is a huge problem in rural areas, and people don't often talk about it because opioids get more attention. What can you tell us?
That is a big problem, Kate. I was mentioning how individuals who have an opioid addiction can be successfully treated with long-term buprenorphine, Suboxone, and methadone treatment. There is no such maintenance therapy that allows them to go on with their normal lives with methamphetamine. So it's actually, in some respects, even a bigger problem in that regard. And we are very hopeful that the psilocybin-assisted therapy will provide these individuals with the ability to decrease the use or even stop the use of methamphetamine based on our experience, the experience of others in tobacco use and alcohol.
Your center is recruiting active meth users in order to study the effects of psilocybin, and you've noted trials with participants who are actively using drugs is uncommon. Can you talk about that? Why recruit people who are actively using meth?
Well, they're the ones that we need to treat, and you could argue that it's unethical if we're looking for individuals who are abusing the drugs to find people who are not using it and then start them on that path. One of the major components of these first studies that we're doing with opioids and with methamphetamine is first to see if it's safe, if we make things worse, but also if we can do this, if these individuals who have so many things going on with their lives, and including the addiction, can actually participate in the studies, which are frankly a little bit complex in terms of the number of visits and the time required.
Do you do brain scans? What do you follow in the individual who's part of the clinical trial on meth?
Well, a lot of it is very simple and just asking them, how much are you using? And many people, or most people, will be honest about that, especially if they're seeking help by being in a clinical study. We do have brain scans that we do in some of our studies with MRIs to see if we can identify a change in the brain function, the brain metabolism. And in other studies, we're doing high-density electroencephalograms with Dr. Matthew Banks and Giulio Tononi. We have some really great facilities here to try to figure out how the circuitry in the brain might be modified. If I could, there's some evidence that these psychedelics and other drugs may actually change the wiring of the brain a little bit to allow it to, in a sense, start new synapses and make new connections. So we're hoping that we can identify some improvement through some of these scans.
Talking about new research into the effects of hallucinogenic drugs on disorders like addiction with Paul Hudson, director of the UW-Madison Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jeff is joining us from Appleton. Jeff, hi.
Hi there. My question for the guest, what are your thoughts on the recreational use of psilocybin? Looking at this kind of as a parallel to marijuana, there are medical uses for marijuana, but the medical uses have kind of been hijacked and used as an end around to get to legalized recreational. So what are your thoughts on this possibly being hijacked as a way to get psilocybin as a legalized recreational drug?
Jeff, thank you for the call. Paul?
Great question. There's a lot of pressure, of course, to make it recreational. And I think a lot of that pressure is both from the users that would like to use it, but also from companies that would like to make a dollar off of it. Like alcohol or marijuana, I would basically say that if someone is going to use psilocybin or any other psychedelic, that they should not drive or do anything hazardous with it, because there are, you know, it's just unsafe. Most of the accidents, most of the injuries, most of the deaths associated with these psychedelics occur from injuries, accidents that occur under the influence. Also, one should not expect that recreational use of psychedelics will be therapeutic. We have a program of screening individuals and preparing them for the dose and attending them and interacting them with the dose, whether it's the psilocybin or the MDMA. And we feel that this is fundamental to the therapeutic benefit, that just taking it isn't necessarily going to make people better. It may give them a psychedelic experience that might be cool, and in some cases it may help. But in terms of expecting a therapeutic benefit, we're not yet convinced that recreational use is going to have that.
I want to turn now to MDMA. The center published a study about the effects of MDMA, street name ecstasy, on people who have severe post-traumatic stress disorder and substance use disorder. What did you learn there?
Well, we were part of a multi-site study that is basically a regulatory event where the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Sciences, MAPS, has gone to the trouble of trying to develop a program to bring MDMA to the FDA for approval. The phase three studies, as we call them, we're participating in two, show that there's at least a twofold, if not a threefold increase in the number of individuals with PTSD who no longer fit the diagnosis, that are basically in remission, which is enormously effective or important, because most of these individuals had an average of 14 years of PTSD that was refractory to other treatment.
I wonder, you know, how do you balance the risk versus the reward here? I'm not sure another way to put it, but, there are going to be side effects. And what do you think about the balance with psychedelics and who would benefit versus the side effects that could happen?
Side effects of psilocybin are really fairly mild, limited to some elevation in blood pressure, heart rate. We sometimes see a headache that we can treat with some Tylenol. The MDMA, a little bit more of a concern, elevated blood pressure, possibly fevers. And so there's more of a concern with that. There's also a concern with MDMA as being, in some cases, a drug that is subsequently abused or has led to addictions. However, in the studies that we've been in, that we participated in, there is no evidence of ongoing abuse of the methamphetamine once they were in the study. So it doesn't, this being in this, these studies and these controlled environments does not seem to lead to later abuse.
That's very promising.
Yeah, it's very promising. And psilocybin and LSD, both psychedelics, there's no evidence in animal studies or human studies that they are addictive, that taking it leads to subsequent use.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
Kate, it's been a pleasure. I hope to talk with you again soon.
Take care. Paul Hudson is director of the UW-Madison Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances. The center has two clinical trials underway on the effects of psilocybin on substance abuse. You can find links to these studies on our program page at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.